coming up on this episode. Matt Kay from the Cinema Jewel podcast joins me to discuss Hot and Tasty, I Am Normal, and The Rule of Three.
There's something about shorts that sort of like lends itself to, you know, comedy sketches and like brief scenarios that don't need a beginning and an end. They can just have the middle and it's funny, you know?
And I chat to writer-director Keith Macri about his latest comedy shorts.
You know, I wanted to tell a very real and very grounded story. And what are people sort of experiencing today? What can people connect with at a very, you know, base level?
All this and more coming up on the Shorts Etc. podcast. Remember to listen and subscribe on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, wherever you feed your podcast needs, and rate and review us now.
My name's Matt Kay from the Cinema Jaw podcast. I got into short film pretty organically before YouTube was really a thing. I ran a film festival called the Indie Incubator Film Fest. It was sort of a punk rock version of a film festival. And it was held for one night, twice a year, and I did that for about 10 years. So I've seen, you know, maybe thousands of short films, every genre you can imagine. And our sort of one thing that we looked for over everything else in our curation was trying to find things with good entertainment value. You know, the only genre we really didn't go for was experimental. Everything else was fair game. So horror.
That's interesting.
Animation. Yeah, it was cool. It was really cool.
Yeah, I mean, you do get a lot of experimental short film, but it mostly does obviously come from students who are, you know, trying out different styles. But you do get everything in short film. It's just the amount of stuff people can fit into 5 minutes is just crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy for sure. I don't know what it is about the experimental stuff. It didn't appeal to me as much because I feel like, especially with shorts, it's easier to be experimental. Like if you're going to make an experimental feature, that's a bit more challenging than an experimental short. And I
that's
wanted
true.
To see what people could do narratively in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen, you know, you get ones go from 2 to 30 minutes, and sometimes the people can fit more in 2 minutes than the other person can with 30, and it's just, I don't know how they do it, but it's impressive.
Yeah, I always found like 10 minutes to be about the sweet spot. Like 10 to 15 minutes is a pretty good length for me for a short.
I do consider like, what is the actual cutoff? So obviously you get anything up to nearly an hour. Is that the point where we stop calling it short film, or is it 45 minutes? I never know quite how to judge that.
Yeah, me neither. A half an hour or less. Like anything more than that, and you're really talking about a short feature, you know, like a short feature length film.
Yeah, because when you think back to like some of the older films, like 1930s or anything like that, a lot of them are like 65 minutes. And
right.
Obviously they're not short films, so you kind of have to, yeah, I'd say go up to about maybe pushing 45 minutes, but I do love
Maybe.
A quick one that's like 3 minutes, and it's just fun.
Me too. What's your favorite genre, or do you have one?
I don't really. I think I always go for comedy, just because it's just such a fun thing to watch, and it's interesting to see what people can do in that amount of time, because obviously trying to make a comedic impression in short film is difficult, because you don't have a lot of setup time. You can't introduce your characters and get to know people more. You just have to sort of, well, you have to do something funny immediately, basically.
Yeah. I found like there was a lot of comedy shorts when I was doing the festival. There's something about shorts that sort of like lends itself to, you know, comedy sketches and like brief scenarios that don't need a beginning and an end. They can just have the middle and it's funny, you know?
Yeah, sure. I think it's because people have tended to make a lot of miniseries or, you know, short series online now, so YouTube is full of series versions, so they're basically like mini short films. But it does
right.
seem to lend itself to that. There's so many of them.
It's the new TV. I mean, there's like everything, and there's no barrier to entry. People are just making stuff. Great.
No, oh, yeah, that's true. I think that, yeah, that's what's great about it. It's just you can just pick up you can pick up a phone these days, and you have to actually be a camera, and you can make a film in, you know, a day.
Yeah, I always like the animations. I find those, like, it's not like you can't just pick up your phone and make an animation. Like, a lot more thought has to go into it and a lot more work. Like,
yeah.
People don't realize how difficult that is.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of good short animated films. It's impressive how when they use the animation, somehow it feels like they can get more emotion into it. Like, I've watched some that just, you know, make you cry in 5 minutes.
Yeah, definitely. Some good ones.
Although that's probably a good... Sorry, go on.
I was just going to ask if you've seen a lot of short documentaries, but that was a good segue, so go ahead and take it.
I'll ask that question first. I don't know, actually. I think when it comes to documentary, I've mostly seen features. I mean, I think up until the last couple of years, I didn't even really get into documentaries. It's more recently that I started watching more of them, but I would definitely say the majority of the short films that I've either watched or been sent have been fiction. I think it does a lot of documentary topics need... They need the time to delve into them. It is difficult to tackle a true-to-life subject in that amount of time.
That's fair, yeah. I've seen a lot of good ones, but they are few and far between.
Yeah, I think it's just, yeah, you find a lot more of fiction. A few that they tend to be, there's a short film, but then they're making it into something larger. So it's just sort of the intro into it. But they do work.
Yeah, no doubt. I've seen good ones.
So yeah, anyway, going back to the animated is a good segue into talking about one of the films, which I included this one because I actually saw it for the first time. I think it was nearly 2 years ago, but they only just released it on Short of the Week earlier this year. But I absolutely loved it. So it's called Hot and Tasty, and it is, I'm not going to explain it. Why don't you just give me your first impression, and then we can go from there.
My first impression, I know those girls. I interacted with girls just like that. As I mentioned, I worked in the bar scene, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So the way it starts off with these, like, drunken girls and they're peeing in an alley, like, that behavior is so true to life. And then, of course, they walk into this, like, farcical situation with a couple of chickens that have taken over a fast food joint.
I think that's one of the things I did really connect with it in the first place, the fact that these two women who are just, you know, drunk and like, oh, I love you, and then they're so mad at each other and then they love each other again, just felt very real. Like, if you, like, especially anywhere in England, if you go any sort of pub after 11 o'clock or after closing, you will find some girls like that.
Oh yeah, they're not difficult to find.
No, but I mean, I also, the first thing that hits you is the animation, because it's just... It's like, you know, like 2D drawn style. And it's just, I think it's so odd with the, like, it's such a modern story, but quite old fashioned. So the two things working together shouldn't work, but they actually work perfectly.
Yeah. Was that all hand drawn, do you know? Or was it like computer assisted, I guess?
It's a good question. I don't actually know that.
It has that hand drawn style.
Yeah. It just feels... You know, it feels more like a moving image, well, in the classic sense, rather than, you know, computer made, even though it may entirely be computer made.
Very, like, oversaturated, a little aggressive with the animation. But not overly aggressive. It doesn't get, like, too distorted and weird. It's just enough, just the right amount.
Yeah, I feel like it pushes it a little bit with, like, the ratios of everything. And, you know, everything's slightly either oversized or overemphasized. But it doesn't go too far. It just feeds into the comedy.
Yeah. And the comedy, it's dark comedy, but not too weird and dark. I mean, it doesn't get, like, hyper-violent or anything, but there is, like, a little bit of a suggestive murder aspect to this whole thing.
Yeah, it is quite... It does manage to completely tackle murder, and for the majority of the film, there is a dead body on the counter in front of them, and yet it does not feel that particularly dark. Just sort of tinges everything.
I think it's the presence of the chickens that sort of comforts us, I guess, because they're so silly. We don't get worried about, like, the darkness of it.
Yeah, they're a bit of a throwback to, like, slapstick, where, like, just looking at each other completely confused about what's going on. What are these, you know, stupid women doing in their shop?
Yeah, it was cute. I liked it.
Yeah, I think it goes. It's funny and it's modern, but it doesn't, you know, go over the top with trying to be, like, crude or anything like that. It's just genuinely funny.
How long was that one? It was pretty short, too.
It's about 4 minutes, that one.
Yeah, nice, easy to digest. This one would have done really well at my film festival, I think, because it sets up the premise. You love the characters because they're people you can relate to, whether you've been those people or... Because who hasn't, let's be honest.
Yeah. Definitely.
And you certainly know those people. And then the situation they walk into is ridiculous and funny and also kind of gross in a lot of ways.
Yeah, that's true.
It was just kind of fun to live vicariously through them for a few minutes. And the animation was colorful and creative and had its own style. Like, it didn't remind me of any other style.
No, that's true. It's a good point. But yeah, I can't think of any that it feels like. Yeah, I feel like, again, kicking off on that note where you can, they're characters that you can relate to, and then diving into the more dark, slightly twisted element of it just makes it so much easier as like a nice transition between the two, so you can sort of accept the ridiculous situation before you even have to think about it.
Yeah. And I like where it ends up. I don't know if you do spoilers or anything. I don't want to spoil it. It doesn't leave you feeling sad or gross or anything like that. Like, it was a good ending, you know?
Mm. Yeah, it does sort of round things out nicely on a like positive note, despite the darkness. Yeah. All right, okay, let's move on to the next one. Do you have a preference or?
No, surprise me.
Let's go with I Am Normal then. So, okay. I Am Normal, which is about a sane woman who fakes the symptoms of a mentally unstable patient to be admitted into a mental institution for a psychiatric experiment, which just, come on, sounds like a horrible idea. I mean,
like,
you know it's not going to go well for this woman. It's still very enjoyable to watch, even though you know it was never going to turn out perfectly. You can imagine all the like scientists and whatever of the 70s doing these horrible experiments on people for the sake of science, as they say, but just messing mentally with them.
Yeah. I know like a lot of reform came out in that industry in the like 70s and 80s, and no doubt, because at least in part, I hope, from experiments like this. I'd never heard of it, but
no, it's not one I heard of.
I'll look it up. It's interesting.
I love the lead actress, Nora Jane Noon, who plays the patient. I saw Wildlife this year's LFF, and she's phenomenal in it. And she's so good at emotionally vulnerable and like messed up roles that she has to really throw herself into.
Yeah, she looked familiar. I mean, I recognize Saul Rubinek from the beginning. He plays like the professor who sets up the experiment.
Yeah, there's a good few cameos in there.
Yeah, no doubt. He was in True Romance. I'd never heard of the lead before, but yeah, she is familiar.
I feel like they chose good people to both be the lead actors and in the supporting roles as well.
Yeah, the woman who plays the sort of Nurse Ratched type character in this, who's like the this like stoic, uncaring, stony nurse who's sort of abusing the patients. She was fantastic.
It's a great bunch of people. Like obviously the woman that plays the one that she sort of connects with and sort of, you know, sees that she isn't actually mentally ill and all of that sort of thing is actually the writer of the film.
Oh, really? Let's talk about the twist without spoiling it for a second, because mm-hmm. I think this is one of the few things that I have found short films don't do extremely well. A twist you have to build up to a bit more or something. I didn't like the twist.
No?
No. And I think they telegraphed it. Like, there's a scene involving a fish tank. During that scene, I pretty much pieced together what was going on. And then when the reveal comes at the very end, between her doctor, and her fiance, I wasn't really taken aback at all, were you?
I mean, no, I probably wouldn't say taken aback. I'm not opposed to how they did it, but I did quite like the story even without the twist. So I didn't need it. But, I mean, you can see, like, it is one of those stories, you know, any sort of, like, mental hospital type thing, it does sort of, fit in with something with a twist. But you're right, it's a difficult thing to pull off in a short film when you've not had as much time to set it up.
Yeah, the whole unreliable narrator type thing.
Although it is one that the filmmakers are making into a feature. So we'll be interested to see how they change it.
Oh, I would be, yeah, I'd be very interested to see this as a feature.
All right, let's move on to the next one. It's called The Rule of Three. Basically, takes OCD and turns it into a mini horror film of sorts. What did you think?
Yeah, it was okay. You know, I don't know, this didn't blow me away. I think it was very well shot and very well acted. I don't know if the concept, because that's the thing with shorts, it's like you've got to have a strong concept because you're in and out so fast. It was scary. Like, I think horror is actually a really good genre in short, because it's amazing how quickly you can build up dread with just some good use of sound effects and music and lighting.
I did love the score in this one.
Yeah, the score is absolutely critical to the success of this movie. There's the scene where she's doing the dishes and, you know, she's scrubbing this knife, just the dread that's building up, you know?
But that was one of the problems that I had with it, is especially the bit with the knife, you knew what was going to happen. It was not a surprise. Like, it just, that was one of my issues with it in general, is that it just felt a bit predictable.
Yeah.
I love, yeah, the score brings in a lot of tension and it's shot well. It has a bit of like a sci-fi edge in the way it likes to go in and out of focus. And it does work, but I didn't feel like there was anything to be surprised by.
Yeah, I agree. I wasn't surprised either. I mean, I don't mind them showing the knife because, you know, that just adds foreboding when you see something. You know it's what's going to happen. But then it sort of devolves into like sort of this weird home invasion type situation that didn't make sense. Like, how does that have anything to do with OCD? Like, and her breaking the ritual and stuff. Like, it was a bit of a stretch.
Yeah, I think to me I just saw it as like a representation of how the condition haunts her. So she's trying to break it. It's fighting back against her and she has to try to stop that. But it is, yeah, to most people it probably does just feel a bit random that, you know, these poor people looking like they've been pulled out of the strangers are just appearing rather than her fighting it within herself.
Yeah, that's another thing. Like, the look of the invaders was very reminiscent of the strangers. It wasn't very original. They were going for this, yeah, this sort of like psyche, like representation in real life. I don't know if it worked.
Yeah, I think it's a varied success. I think in a certain sense, it's interesting that they've tried to sort of take on the idea of bringing this metaphor for how like people with this sort of like mental illness have to sort of fight against themselves and the fear that builds up about if they do break it. But it's a tricky thing to do. Like, you're taking on any sort of like mental illness in that amount of time, and especially in a genre that's not drama, it's very difficult. So it does, I think by itself it does work, but it has borrowed a few things from other places.
Oh man, did you see that Haunted House movie from last year? Oh my gosh. The Relic.
Oh, I did, yeah.
That movie takes on mental illness, or at least dementia, sort of like Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah.
In a very unique way within the horror genre. And I think it was incredibly successful. And I get that this short film was going for that, and I know that it's difficult, especially in a short runtime. But even with all those caveats, I just don't know. I think you're right. It's successful in parts, but overall I was kind of let down by this one.
Yeah, I think you're sort of leaning into feeling like it's better because the actual style of it works really well. I think if you sort of took its parts away from each other, you wouldn't have that much of an opinion. But yeah, I think it's got solid direction and score, and the sort of more visual aspects of it make it work.
Yeah, I agree. Well said.
Do you have a favorite of the three then?
My favorite of the three is the animation. It hot and tasty. It was quick, easily digestible, very relatable, very colorful and original. Of the three, I think it's the most successful at what it set out to do. The other two were more ambitious. Like, especially I Am Normal, with some actual like name actors in it, and I would be interested to see if they can make that into a feature-length film. Of the three shorts, Hot and Tasty. How about you?
Yeah, I'd probably have to go with the same. I enjoyed I Am Normal, but Hot and Tasty, yeah, I saw it nearly 2 years ago. Honestly, it just stuck with me. Like, I really enjoyed it, and yeah, so I was excited when they put it up for free on Short of the Week. So now it's just freely available on the internet.
That's cool. Yeah, everyone should check this one out. I think it was really cool.
Yeah, I think that's one of the like problems of people don't realize how much of it is actually out there. I mean, there's plenty of channels like Short of the Week that put out stuff all the time. And then there's, you know, individual filmmakers that are all putting stuff out. And like, if you searched just short film on YouTube, every day you'd find probably 100 new ones every single time.
Oh yeah. I was never at a loss for entries into my film festival. In fact, the biggest challenge was paring it down to one evening's worth of film. You know, we only ran it for about 2 hours. I mean, there were intermissions and breaks, so it lasted maybe like 3 or 4 hours, but just getting all the films, paring them down to the high quality ones, it was a challenge. And this was just people in Chicago and the surrounding area. So going worldwide on the internet, forget about it. You could watch short films every day, all day for the rest of your life and never run out.
Yeah, you definitely could. Whereas like with the filmmaker who I'm going to be talking to later this week, I actually found him. Basically, I get submitted films for review all the time. But I had this one particular couple of weeks where I like cleared the whole list and I had nothing left to write about. So I just searched short film in YouTube and I found this one film, and then he just happened to find the review and emailed me, and then he sent me his next film after that, and it's really great. So we're going to talk about that.
That's awesome.
So making it's just connections. Yeah, exactly. It's just the thing of you pick something. If you literally just look out there, you will find the multitudes of short film that are out there. And it's a difficult thing to think how to get people to watch it, because it seems to be such a thing that you only get into if you're into film to begin with. Like, I only happened to get into short film because I started running a website reviewing films and people started sending them to me. But it'd be interesting to see how we can get just your average person who, you know, maybe watches a couple of features a week, how we can get them to watch short film.
Well, the thing that I never understood was, why don't we have more shorts in the theater? Like, before a Pixar film, you'll see a short by them, you know? Why isn't that? It used to be the case everywhere, you know? They would show maybe a cartoon and then a short practical film. And now that just doesn't happen. So there's a perfect opportunity, especially with people going back to the theater and theaters needing to sort of reimagine their business. Show some shorts in the theater, if anybody's listening.
Hello, my name is Keith Macri from Boston, Massachusetts, and I'm a screenwriter, filmmaker. I've always loved filmmaking, really storytelling, just my whole life. But I loved filmmaking before I knew what filmmaking was. I just loved storytelling since I was a young kid, and followed those passions to Emerson College here in the U.S. and got a film degree, and then just spent as much time possible telling stories for people who would let me tell those stories. I worked in sports. I got my first opportunity in sports. I worked for the Boston Red Sox here in the U.S. and started my journey there, doing TV shows, documentary work, commercial content, you know, whatever they would let me do, I wanted to do it. And then after a good 10 years in sports, to be more aligned with filmmaking, because I've just grown to love it so much, and left sports because sports is all encompassing. It dominates your whole life. And had now have some free time to be able to pursue those passions a little bit more seriously. So I've made 3 short films in just a few years. Hopefully want to make more. Written several scripts, obviously, in my spare time as well. And then started a film review channel on YouTube called The Bluff Council, where we discuss a different film every week with my business partner, Ev Duran. And I just live and breathe film as much as possible now. So here I am, talking to you.
Great. That was good. Summation of your journey so far. You wanted to get into short film, or is that a beginning and you're going to move on to doing features?
I'll do whatever, I guess. I don't have a hard and fast plan. I want to do things. I just want to do things, period. So I'm just looking for opportunities, and I'm not going to wait for them. So short films seems to be the way that I can just do things, that I can act, and I can act now. I write them, I direct them, I line up the cast. I do, you know, I have a crew of people that I work with often. So we're kind of in a little bit of a flow now. I mean, the pandemic obviously hurt that, but before that time, you know, I have a team, you know, and I have access to gear and stuff. So it's the path of least resistance for me to be able to tell story. So,
so when did you shoot the latest one?
It was in pandemic. I would not let it stop me. Funny story, I had written it, and where I am, the pandemic shut everything down March 13th, 12th, 13th of 2020, and I was scheduled to shoot this film March 15th. So 2 days before, I had all the gear, had a crew, had people flying in from LA to be in it. I had like all moving parts. And literally 2 days before, everyone's like, nah, this is a thing. We can't, no, nothing. You know, everything shuts down.
Yeah.
So that was a tough blow because I was just so close to it. I wish we could have gotten through it. We obviously collected ourselves, had to recast a little bit and wait until things were, you know, protocols were in place and we could be safe. So I was able to shoot it in early October.
Okay.
Pared down the cast and crew as much as possible to keep it as safe as possible. And no COVID cases, you know, came from the filming of this, which is obviously a win for us. So.
It's a good caveat to have.
Safety first.
Yes. How long did it take you to shoot it all together?
2 days. Two very long days. But we rented an Airbnb, got in there, and that was partially by design in terms of from a production standpoint. I had one location. For those who have not seen the film, Where's Kate? Available now on YouTube, Keith Macri Creative. Check that out if you'd like.
Yeah.
But I wanted to, it's one location, as you'll see, or hopefully see, and on purpose to make the production end easier, with not having to worry about travel and hard schedules, we're there, everyone's locked in, and to give the actors as much room to play as much as possible. I wanted it to be very actor friendly, kind of just have loose lighting set up. I mean, that might not sound as great as it does in my head, but wanted to generally light, not keep things moving quickly at the pace for the actor's sake, to get lost in the scenario. So one location was definitely on purpose for both of those reasons.
I suppose as well, because it's set in the evening, you can just sort of shut yourselves off.
Correct. Yeah. So I didn't have to worry about, we started at night, we used the sun, lack of the sun. I didn't, you know, blacking things out. I tried to make, again, because it was just myself and my wife. That was the crew. And my wife is not in, quote unquote, in the business. So it was difficult. So I didn't want to spend too much time worrying about the production end of it, knowing what a bare bones crew that we had. It was, I wanted to get the best performance as possible.
One of the things I was thinking about with this one is how did you, you know, end up with the idea of AI suggestions that sort of frame the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love comedy. I love comedy very much. And I most of the things, if not all of the things I want to do, I want to have some element of humor to them. I don't take things too seriously in general. And so I kind of have that represented in my films. But the reason I say that is I think all comedies need a dramatic premise. I think the best comedies are rooted within dramatic premises. I start with what would be an interesting situation? What would be a good story to tell? And then I try and find comedy that would naturally present itself from there. My films tend to straddle those lines between drama, comedy, or mystery and comedy, or whatever the case may be, something else and comedy, because I really do try and put a focus on the story as well, not just funny for funny's sake.
Yeah.
So again, I say all that to say I started to think about what would be an interesting premise. What would people be interested in? What would pull people in? And having the internet spy on you, and what that mean, and what pictures do the internet paint about you based on your suggestions, or what Facebook tells us, or what Amazon tells us, or whatever the case may be. It felt like a really interesting place to start.
Yeah, cause I did really love that about it. The combination of the fact that it's genuinely funny and the comedy works all throughout it. But there is also this aspect of thinking, if that did actually happen to you and you saw the suggestions on somebody's phone saying, well, you've searched for this, you may like poison and whatever else, whether it would actually make you question that person. Because I'm not sure if most people plant a seed of doubt in their mind.
The one of my favorite lines of the film is, who are you going to trust, me or the internet?
Yeah,
and I think
that's
really the point of the film, is like, who are you going to trust, someone at their word or someone based on the internet?
Yeah, it's definitely a big question today because we place way too much need in use of the internet.
Correct. I don't disagree.
So actually, yeah, one of the other things was how did you come up with that opening where it sort of like dives straight into that little highlight reel with the like booming bass score over the top of it, which feels very much throwback. I mean, I'd say Just Mystery, but it feels like it has like a little bit of an action note to it as well.
Yeah, that was not written. That came in the edit. I
Okay.
originally wanted to start just with the picture. I wanted to, in my mind, I want to, the first frame, first image, I want to always mean something. So originally it was supposed to be the shot of a picture of the couple, and I wanted it to be where she was like choking him to be just like, that's the answer, you know, that's the answer
Yeah.
right there, but you just don't know it. So that was always the first image in my head. And then after the film came out longer than I thought it was going to be, you know, I wanted it to be around 13, 14 minutes. It's 16, 17 minutes. So I said, shit, people aren't going to stick around too much for this. I'm my setup is way too long. And stubbornly, and maybe selfishly, I didn't want to cut jokes. I didn't want to cut dialogue because I liked it, and that was probably my fault as well. I probably should have cut more from the dinner table scene that followed. But I said I need something to hook people in. I need to do something that's going to set the tone and give people a reason to be patient with the next 6 minutes of this short film, because you know, timing for people, that people don't have the attention spans they once had, unfortunately.
Oh, they definitely do not,
So
no.
so I said, let me give you 20, 30 seconds of like what we're gonna get to. We're gonna get to this moment. Let's see how. So that was the reason for that choice, to give people a reason to kind of stick around.
I mean, do you think we could appeal people more to watch more short film by the fact that it is such a, you know, easily bingeable content because it's short and sweet and they can you can see, you know, 20 different films in a day?
It's a great point. I often wonder to myself why short films are not bigger. Or why not? Why don't have they have a bigger presence? Why don't they have more of a marketability for, you know, I mean, I know there are short films like on Netflix and Hulu, but it's still few and far between. I don't, there's not a huge presence, and I don't know why, based on people's interest levels. I mean, it's shorter, 10, 15, 20 minutes. It's not 2 hours. You would think there'd be more of a demand for it. So I often ask that question myself.
Yeah, I mean, I was scrolling through Netflix and there is, you know, there's a handful of short film in there. They've thrown in like a few of the other ones like Heroin and some of the Oscar nominated stuff.
Right.
Do you think that's a way to get people into it by them stumbling across it on a streaming service?
I mean, yes, that is one way to do it. If I would think what would actually move the needle is you're gonna need a name. You're gonna need a Scorsese. You're gonna need a David Fincher. You're gonna need somebody, a director or actors to go down that road and to try and pioneer that on behalf of other filmmakers and other actors and actresses. To make it a viable thing for people to say, oh, that's why I want to check that film out and then stumble across the rest. There's not enough big enough draw in terms of celebrity, I would think, unfortunately, because that's what's so charming and so wonderful about short films is that they're so much more accessible for people who don't have the opportunity to do a feature. You know, if
That's
it's a
for sure.
stepping stone, we you know, if it's going to be the quote unquote minor leagues, well, we need to have a real farm system then. It can't just be this underground thing that only friends and family of those filmmakers really know about. They shouldn't struggle as much. They shouldn't struggle as much. So you definitely need that support from the feature world, I think, to make it more of a farm system.
Sort of like how Pixar will put short films ahead of their features. So you probably don't
A
know of the
thousand percent.
filmmakers that made the short films. They're not names you might know. I mean, they might be, you know, Oscar nominated for all the short, but people won't know it, but it just forces you to watch it, especially in a cinema.
Yeah, it's a great comparison. It's a great
And they do
comparison.
make some great short films.
Absolutely. I was lucky enough in my past life, I worked for the San Francisco Giants, and they have a relationship with Pixar. And we were able to go over to Oakland, where to go over to Pixar, and we watched Finding Nemo 2, or is it Finding Dory?
Finding
And
Dory, yeah.
bef Finding Dory, and we got an advanced screening of that. And then before that, I got to watch a film, I forget the name of it, but it went on to win an Oscar. It was a short film, and I watched that before we watched Finding Dory. And I wouldn't have seen that if they didn't put it beforehand, if I didn't wasn't exposed to it because of the feature film that we were going to
Yeah, I think probably that's the good thing about now that they've got Disney Plus, they are putting them all out there. And I think they've made a series of new ones as well. I think I saw some teasers on YouTube that they're putting out just as a series of short films on the channel.
It's awesome. So more of that. Do more of that, world.
Yeah, I mean, considering, I mean, short film is basically how probably nearly every single filmmaker gets into making films because it's just It's the way students do it, the simpler way that you can make content straight away. It's been going on for years, and yet there's not as much attention to it. It just genuinely doesn't make sense how people can love and love these filmmakers, but they don't seek out work like that.
Do you mind if I ask you a question? Do you dabble in filmmaking? So where does your love of cinema come from?
It's a good question. I've thought about that occasionally. I'm not sure entirely. Like, I've always watched films. And, you know, I used to have trips to the cinema with my dad or trips to the cinema with my sister. And it just sort of grew out of that. And it became, you know, like feeding a curiosity. It got bigger and bigger. Mm. And then over the last few years, it's probably gotten its biggest. Good. I'm trying to make it more international films now. So, I mean, as many films as I watch, if you go on Letterboxd, they're still mostly American. And as much as I do love American cinema, because it's a staple around the world, but I do want to watch more. So that's where MUBI comes in, because for one, they have short film as well.
Do you see a difference? I'm not as global, which I should be, and I hope to expand my horizon. What are some of the differences? Because I would love to appeal to a broader audience, but I don't think I do a good job of that, because I only just write what I know, and what I know is what's in front of me. What are the key differences that you see from international films?
I mean, I think it's a good question, but I think when you start watching more and more stuff, you realize that a lot of it is similar. I was watching a film from the 60s based in Japan, and a lot of the style of it felt very similar to Alfie, which is obviously British. Okay. And I think you can find a lot of parallels in things. I think people are afraid, not afraid, some people just can't be bothered to watch foreign film. Other people just don't want to read subtitles. But I think they're not aware of the fact that if you do dive into films from a lot of different countries, you may find differences in the style and things like that, or that their sense of humor might be different. Obviously, British people are very famous for their sarcastic sense of humor, and then, you know, there's all different countries have, yeah, and then everyone has sort of their own way of doing things. But I think story-wise, you do tend to find a lot of similar things, which I don't think people realize. If they just, you know, pick something up from a different country, they might actually find something that's similar to what they already know.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Great. Encouraging for me. Good to hear.
Yeah, I mean, especially with, you know, because you deal with comedy, that is something that translates quite well. I mean, unless you've got like a very specific sense of humor, there are some films which should just go so far that it can't be funny in most places.
Yeah.
I mean, I think if you're not playing it crazy, risky, then you can translate it to different countries.
Because I don't know how to be funny if I don't think it's funny.
Yeah, you know? Of course, like, you have to go with your instinct.
Another audience. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think you can't escape your own, you know, where you come from. It's always going to feed into your work. I think Hitchcock said that you always see the filmmaker in the work, or some of that's a little bit disturbing, because obviously some of his films deal with slightly disturbing things.
Yeah.
So, like, he said that, I think he said it was in the document Hitchcock Truffaut, and he was talking about that, and then they happened to be talking about Vertigo in the same thing, and he was talking about how there's a vein of necrophilia in how he, you know, makes the woman dress up as his dead girlfriend. And so it's sort of awkward timing to talk about how you find the filmmaker in their work and then talk about how you put necrophilia into a film.
Right.
Moving into that, the interesting thing about, obviously talking about Where's Kate and then your film before that, Where We Fit, mm-hmm. Where We Fit has a much more vein of fantasy in it. Was that, like, whereas Where's Kate is much more grounded. Was that a conscious choice, or was it just how the stories worked out?
I wanted to continue to grow and evolve. I am not a perfect filmmaker. I'm not even a good filmmaker. I'm still learning. I'm still growing. And I never want to change that position. I don't ever want to feel content. So if you're not trying and learning and growing, then, you know, I don't know what, to me, what are you doing? You know?
Yeah.
I don't like people who think they are finished. That's just a general statement. Like, I'm not finished, you know? So Where We Fit was an idea I had as I question God, unfortunately or unfortunately, however you want to.
Just a casual topic to take on.
Yeah. I have these thoughts. I have these ideas. I don't, there's no definitive answer, which is part of the beauty within God, I think. But I question, I wonder, you know, so sort of quote unquote tackled that, or wanted to just express those questions. And then I want to go in a different direction. You know, I wanted to try something different. And I think the way you phrased it is very accurate. You know, I wanted to tell a very real and very grounded story. And what are people sort of experiencing today? What can people connect with at a very you know, base level, you know, because, you know, dealing with God and these bigger, like, why do we exist? And that topic may not be for everyone. So I wanted to say, all right, well, what can I do that's a little bit more everyday? What's a little bit more, you know, normal human connection? And the internet is that thing that connects us all.
It is, yeah. And now the pandemic, but internet also.
Yes.
Another one of the things I found interesting, I was revisiting Where We Fit earlier, and I don't think I made a note of this the first time around, but I noticed how there's actually a lot of crude language in there, and yet it doesn't take on this seedy feel. It just sort of sits there and gets away with it, and it doesn't affect it too much. Like, I was thinking in that scene in the beginning when they're deciding about who she's going to be, the amount of times they say penis is quite a lot.
Yes.
But you don't notice. I didn't notice it that much the first time around. And then when I was looking back at it, I don't remember it having this sort of language as much. But it just, it just sort of casually fits in the conversation, even though it's like an office conversation. But yeah, they say penis many times.
I wrote penis many times. I don't take anything too seriously. And I don't know. That's probably going back to the Hitchcock thing. that might be just a little bit. That's probably more my personal sense of humor is kind of, I don't want to say poking fun at, but I just don't take anything too seriously. And I think I just think it's funny to have a very serious conversation about penis and have it make sense to what they're at. That's the example that we're going with, but we're going to approach this in a very serious way.
Yeah.
So that juxtaposition is funny to me. Obviously, like, penis is just a weird thing to be very serious about. That juxtaposition always I thought was funny, so I put it in the film. I have no good reason for that, but I just thought it was funny.
I think it works well. It has that parallel of, you know, they're angels having a conversation about somebody's fate and how their life's going to go, but it has the parallel of being a workplace and considering being that one employee that goes against the grain, and then ultimately you're going to be thrown over by your boss anyway.
Yes. Yeah. Hopefully people can relate to that as well.
Yeah, I think people can definitely relate to that.
Well, that's why I put myself, that is me. I am that angel who does that. I make a small cameo in it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's me. It's easier to have you say weird shit than force other people to say weird shit.
Yeah. That's true.
I normally, and what I do with Where's Kate, I like to give actors the opportunity to find it. My words, I'm not so tied to my words where I'm like, no, you got to say these words. There are certain elements that I want to be more particular about as a director, but for the most part, I think the best things come when the actors feel ownership and it comes a little bit more organically. So I let them play with this, with Where We Fit. We didn't have that luxury because of timing, and they're reacting, you know, in a bubble. So they have to say certain things to make the other side of the conversation make sense. So we were a little bit more of a stickler about the dialogue in that sense, just because the nature of the product would lend itself to that. We just kind of stuck to the script, and for a decent amount, some ad lib and some kind of moments happen organically.
How did you bring in the ending scene where she gets into the cab?
In terms of like production?
In terms of, you know, writing. The story sort of half ends, and then obviously that scene sort of rounds everything out perfectly.
I like situations in film where the audience knows something that characters do not. I think that's an interesting position to put audience members in. I think it raises sort of the stake. So the point of that final scene is I want the audience to come away with the connection of these three people and how is it is a necessity for these people to meet, but not have the characters know, because the characters can't know. That's not how life works. Where that random person you bump into in the street and spill their coffee, you have no idea how that affects them or what chain of events that sets off.
Yeah.
And that's sort of the point that I was sort of making, a vague point to have the audience feel whatever they want to about those characters moving forward, but just that they met for a reason. That was sort of my own, the goal. So having the connective tissue between these two characters in the phone call is that third person. I want to say her name was Jamie, who they meet in the car. She is the connective tissue to those two people and connecting it all together. And the audience sees that, but the two individuals do not.
I like how that rounds things out, but also the actual dialogue of it. The cabbie, you ask her if she has a husband. It's obviously the question that they're going to ask any woman, which people really need to do away with at this point.
Yes.
So when did you make that one? It was a couple of years ago now.
It was, if I remember correctly, 2019. 2019.
I think it will still, you know, the whole message of it and themes of it will still feel very relevant in years to come. It is, you know, it's the age-old question of why do we exist, and touching upon sexism and her being a sex line operator is quite relevant.
Hopefully
make money.
Yes, it'd be an OnlyFans, I think, now. But I that was part of it.
True.
Part of why I didn't want to do a web thing. I couldn't do a web thing. People asked me that. I remember I'm working with, because they can't see each other. And I thought it was also a worse fate because I wanted to put this woman in the worst way possible. Like, that's worse. It's phone sex is worse than webcam, in my humble opinion. I mean, it's all shitty. But, you know, you try and make this sound as terrible as possible. And I think I had to cut some stuff from Heaven where we get into that a little bit more, where so the least you can do is give her a webcam show. Like, that's the least you can do as like a sign of good faith. But I had to cut some of that stuff because Heaven was just too long, unfortunately.
Because I agree with you, it being worse over the phone. And I think it works more in the sense of how open people can feel having a conversation with a stranger in that situation, because you don't have to look at them and you don't have to do anything. You can just say whatever you want and you don't have a clue who this person is, either on the phone or if they're judging you. Well, you can tell by the tone slightly, but you can pretty much just say what you want and there's not going to be a consequence down the line.
It's a great point. And something I would hope that people would get, it's this person is calling a phone sex line, not for sex, but for advice. That's how desperate that person is to just have someone listen. He's going to literally just pay someone to listen to him for a little bit.
There's the expectation of from talking to someone who, you know, isn't going to give a shit about you. They don't know who you are. They don't care. So they can give you an honest answer when you ask them a difficult question.
Correct.
I do. I love her character as well, of how just blunt she is, especially in the start of their conversation where she's really trying to keep up the half-assed sex line, where she's just saying whatever she can. She's like, just get you off as quick as possible and so you could leave me alone. Messy and awkward. I love the way it's timed out, that she's just especially because you theoretically in the film he can only hear what she's saying, but it's the face while she says it as well. She's just glazed over.
Kat is great. She's in Where's Kate as well. Kat, I think, is, she's a singer songwriter as well. She's just a talented young lady. I think she's great. So I was happy. I thought she did a great job with. I wrote it specifically for her because I thought what a job she could do, you know, she would be the right person to play that phone sex operator. So it's hard to tell someone, listen, here's what I think of you. But she was great.
Did any of the rest of the actors in Where's Kate know each other beforehand, or were they all new to each other?
Where's Kate is a collection of people that I knew and know each other, because I wanted that chemistry. I wanted people to feel as comfortable as possible. That's something I really tried to focus on, because those people are not actors. They're people who I know, who I believed could do these things and could tell the story. And I wanted chemistry they have to be friends. You know, they have to work with one another for that to work. So they all knew.
Yeah, I think that comes through.
But Kate was cast. Kate was cast. She was not.
Yeah, I think it has that nice little thing, even in, you know, relatively short amount of time, how they each have their own dynamic with each other, the way that they interact, in the sense like a past history between them.
I love feedback. That's what I love what you do, is because you give sincere feedback. I think that's all filmmakers want, especially short filmmakers, is just like honest feedback. If people hate my films, that's fantastic. Tell me why. Tell me why you hate them. Tell me why you didn't like them. Tell me what didn't work for you. I'm always curious, and that's why I appreciate. I can tell that you watched the film. You know, I can tell that you took the time to watch it and you give your feedback, and that's awesome.
Yeah, I've definitely had several email me and be like, here's the film. If you don't like it, then fine, just write the review. It doesn't matter. Even if you don't like it, just write it anyway.
I stand by that. I respect the integrity, because we at this point, we're all still trying to learn, trying to figure it out.
Although I was thinking about what we said at the beginning about that maybe we have more known names making short films and putting them out there with also name actors, that maybe people get into it more. And one of the examples that came to mind was Yorgos Lanthimos did a short film called Nimic. Matt Dillon is the main character. And I enjoyed it for the fact that he is a very strong filmmaker. But I don't know if it's like a tricky thing of he's going back from features to short film and then trying to condense everything down. The story of it was too vague. It doesn't really give you a reason to care about this character or his story. One of the things I guess I haven't mentioned before was actually how I found your short film, which was actually a good point of how people can just get into short film themselves. Because if you go onto Google and just search the phrase short film, you will find a ridiculous amount of content. Even if you limited it to what had been posted within a day or within a week, there must be at least 50 films, well, short films, uploaded to YouTube every day from different filmmakers, whether it's from, you know, channels like Short of the Week or just individual filmmakers. There is stuff going on there every single day. And it just so happened that I went searching for other short film, and I think I looked at a handful from all different places and different countries, and one of them happened to be yours, and then obviously you happened to email me afterwards. And then I watched your next film, which is, yeah, it's a way people don't even need to think about it to start watching short film. You can literally just click a few buttons, go on YouTube, go on, most streaming services have some, but I would probably recommend more going to YouTube than going to somewhere like Netflix, because you're going to find much more variety. So are you working on anything else at the moment?
I just finished writing a feature that because of where we fit, actually, one best screenplay in a film festival here. The award for that prize was to get connected with someone who finances films. And then I sent an old feature to that person. They liked the writing, but they didn't like the story. They said, wanting you to take another crack at a story. We workshopped some ideas, and I wrote another feature, another kind of dark comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I just finished that off. So I'm hoping that becomes a thing. That would be lovely. Yeah. So that's, I just finished that up. But in terms of shorts, hopefully now that the world is opening back up again, I'm hoping to try and, if I could shoot two short films, you know, before the end of the year, that would be ideal.
How long does it typically take you to write your short films?
Not that long, to be honest with you. It doesn't take, let me rephrase that. to get the idea down, to come up with the idea and just get it on paper. Because that's, to me, I want to do that as quickly as possible, because you have nothing until it's on paper. So I'll take a few weeks to get it, like just get something down. And then that's like the block of clay that I have to work with. So I try and get through that process as quickly as possible, because I feel like my work doesn't start until it's down.
Yeah.
So then it's down, I can see it and push it and pull it and do whatever I got to do. So I just try and do that a couple weeks, a month at the most, once I really have a good solid grasp on what I'm trying to do, or the general story, the beats I want to hit, I'll throw it down as quickly as possible, and then work at it from there. And then the script is always evolving until the minute we're shooting.
Yeah,
that's how it is for me. I mean, good writers may not feel that way, but the script evolves until the second we're rolling.
You said you worked with your wife on the last one. Is that something you do often?
No. she's obviously relevant in my life, and we talk about everything. She's a part of my life in every way. So
I would hope so.
She's
Does she give you, you know, feedback on your scripts or anything like that?
Yes, that's where, like, every idea I have, I'm running by her just as a sounding board. So she reads all my scripts. Every idea I have, I share, we discuss, we workshop. She's always on set as well. This, she had to have a lot more active role that she wouldn't normally do because of the pandemic. So I needed, like, she was a camera assistant. She was a gaffer. She's everything. Script supervisor. So where in other films, she'd have a less capacity, just, you know, on set. But she's a huge part of everything else.